Beans, Couch, Potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Neil Miller, and you're listening to Fat Guys, the Movies. And this week, we've got a big, huge, epic show for you, I think.
That was anticlimactic.
Well, the biggest movie of the year is coming out this week. I don't know if you knew this, but probably the single most impactful, culturally relevant film that we will talk about all year.
Also, you mean that new Eddie Murphy movie?
No, Big Man Japan is coming out.
Oh, yeah.
So we're going to talk about Big Man in Japan. We're also going to talk about Angels and Demons, the new Ron Howard movie. Or yes. Tom Hanks movie, I guess.
Or Dan Brown movie.
It's Ron Howard's movie. He made the movie.
Or Stellan Skarsgård.
Well, Stellan Skarsgård, it's whatever his name is. He's good stuff. So.
Oh, okay.
But before we get into that, here's how you can get a hold of us. You can get us over on fatguysthemovies.com. You can get us on iTunes. Just search Fat Guys the Movies and subscribe to us and review us and all that good stuff. You can email us, fatguysatfilmschoolrejects.com, or you can leave us a voicemail, 614-388-8735.
Yes.
That's where you take over, Kevin.
Oh, okay. I had such power and, humor and biting wit during our show prep. I just lost it right now.
Well, see, there's no way for this to be proven either way, but I don't think that you had it either way. I don't think you had it before.
You were telling me I was awesome.
You definitely don't have it now.
You're telling me I was awesome.
I beg to differ.
Shall we move on to
Rewind
Angels and
the
Demons?
Tapes. That's not true.
No. Let's move on to Angels and Demons. Let's talk about probably the movie that's arguably the biggest one opening this week.
Well,
in fact, the only one really opening wide.
Unless it's in Japan, because obviously Big Man Japan is a bigger, physically bigger movie.
Big Man Japan is out in two theaters.
Doesn't matter.
This week, but...
So?
All right. Well, let's talk Angels and Demons.
Sure.
Tom Hanks returns as Robert Langdon is in this big screen adaptation of the best-selling Dan Brown book about the return of the Illuminati and their war against the Vatican.
We are under attack from an old enemy.
Find Professor Langdon.
That's Illuminati.
The Illuminati were a secret society dedicated to scientific truth. The Catholic Church ordered a brutal massacre to silence them forever. They've come for their revenge.
There's a hidden trail through Rome itself.
May God forgive you for what you've done.
Father, if God has issues, they won't be with what we've done. They'll be with what we're about to do.
Liam, Neil. I called you Liam because that's my son's name.
Still not one of your children.
No, I don't want you. I just you're way too hairy. They don't have neck beards the way you do.
Thanks, by the way.
You're welcome. Speaking of hair, my favorite part about Angels and Demons, they got rid of that ridiculous Nicolas Cage mullet on Tom Hanks.
Right. I mean, that was pretty good, I guess. For the costume department, that's an upgrade.
Well, that's true. No, actually,
for the makeup department.
It'd be hairstylist.
Hair and makeup.
Let me ask you, what'd you think first? I want to give you first credit.
Well, here's what I thought about this overall. If there's one thing that bothered me about The Da Vinci Code, it was the severe lack of energy and lack of urgency that movie had, and the heavy reliability on happenstance and the ease at which Robert Langdon put the puzzle pieces together in Da Vinci Code. He was like, he'd look at something and be like, oh, right, I get it. And you never felt like you were discovering this mystery, because if they're both mystery movies, they're both essentially puzzle movies.
Yeah.
And in this one, I still don't think you get that sense of discovery along with the character. You're just kind of watching him discover stuff, and you're not really, the audience doesn't feel invested in that process. But I felt like it had more action to it. It had more energy to it. It had a lot of urgency to it. And I thought, like, I felt it moved a lot better. And it has, like, a very cool ending. So, there you go.
Well, yeah, it was very energetic. And, in fact, the movie runs 2 hours, 20 minutes or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't feel like that at all. I mean, it's relentless on how fast it's directed. There's a couple scenes where it slows down.
Right.
There's one in the middle. And actually, near the end, it kind of slows a bit in the end. But, like, the first hour and a half of the movie just goes.
Right.
Now, I read the book for this one. I didn't read The Da Vinci Code. I know, aren't you impressed?
I'm impressed that you read.
that was my invitation of you. This one is, Angels and Demons is actually, and I've heard a lot of people who've read both books have preferred Angels and Demons over the Da Vinci Code. It's a simpler story. It's not as complex. It's not as convoluted. Whereas the Da Vinci Code was like, this led to this, led to this, led to this. Whereas in Angels and Demons, they're like, we have this problem. We need to solve it. And here's the path to go to. And it's just them going and trying to figure out, sort of solve a simpler mystery than the Da Vinci Code. Where the Da Vinci Code, they just kind of stumble upon a murder that leads them to a greater conspiracy. Whereas this one, they just need to, there's a threat to the Vatican, and they need to uncover
right.
that threat.
It's more of a crime mystery than this grand historical conspiracy that was the Da Vinci Code. It's more of a, like, people are going to die, so we need to figure this out.
Exactly. And the other thing about Angels and Demons that I liked, it really feels like it's not an action movie, but it feels like an action movie.
Yeah, no, it moves like an action movie.
Yeah, it's like an intellectual action movie. It'd be like Transformers without the giant robots.
I don't know
Without Megan Fox.
It feels more intelligent than Transformers.
Without any of the big explosions, although there are a couple. You know, so I mean, this is...
In a sense, nothing like Transformers.
Nothing like Transformers. Although I will tell you, and I don't know how to pronounce her name, but the girl who plays Vittoria Vetra.
Uh-huh.
We saw her in Vantage Point. She played the girlfriend of the terrorist in Vantage Point, and she mm-hmm. played Eric Bana's wife in Munich.
Mm-hmm.
She's hot.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was just kind of like a...
She has a smoking bod. That's all I've got to say.
She just felt like replacement, like the same... They used the same formula there. Mm-hmm. They had, like, Audrey Tautou, who is gorgeous in The Da Vinci Code. And obviously, for reasons that I wouldn't want to spoil the other movie, she's not coming back for the second movie.
Yeah.
Isn't this a prequel? I've never read the books, so I don't...
This is how it works. Angels and Demons was written before Da Vinci Code, so it's not a prequel. It just...
Right.
Da Vinci Code was a sequel to Angels and Demons. It was the next adventure of Robert Langdon.
Right.
This one, they've made it a sequel to the Da Vinci Code. They just flipped the chronology.
Because I kind of felt like... And they give they a never really explained... I mean, they kind of did, but...
Well, I mean, you get the point where he's like... Where they say to him when they first approach Robert Langdon, he's like, why are you talking to me? I'm not... The Vatican doesn't like me because of what happened before. You know what I mean? So they do reference that, but ultimately, the movies can be flip-flopped. It's not like you're continuing some sort of plot elements from one movie to the next. And I will say this, as somebody who's read the book, it's a... they did a really good job in adapting it. They had to change some things, and they made some significant changes to characters and story.
Right.
But you've seen movies where they make changes and you're just like, why in the world did they do that? That makes no sense. They didn't need to change that. Right. Everything they changed in this, I'm like, yeah, they kind of needed to do that. They needed to condense this. And that character, I see they rolled him into that character. So it all kind of made sense. It was a very good adaptation. Actually, I think this is, of all the adaptations I've seen, this is a really kind of good benchmark for future screenwriters should read the book and see this movie, and just to see how they've how they've done it, so they don't make stupid changes for movies in the future. So,
yeah, no, I'm with you.
Fat guy grade, Neil.
I'm giving it a kind of rocks because it was better than Da Vinci Code, which I thought the Da Vinci Code sucked.
Okay, I give it a rocks. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a great adaptation.
All right. And we're back here on Fat Guys the Movies, and we're rolling right into our second segment, in which we are going to talk about Big Man Japan, which is a movie that we don't have a clip for. We don't need a clip, because this movie is that impressively big.
Well, I would go as far to say that it was a last-minute addition, and I was too lazy to look for a clip.
Right, fair enough. But, it's dubbed.
I believe in
it's
being honest
movie.
With our audience, Neil.
But it's also a dub movie, so it's really hard to get a clip for.
That's true.
Even in the trailer, there's not a lot of dialogue. But if you'd like to see the trailer, just go to Film School Rejects and search Big Man Japan. We've posted the trailer before. And
we posted the trailer a year and a half ago or something like that.
Well, yeah. And we saw this movie like a year and a half ago. We saw it at last year's Ohio 24-hour sci-fi marathon, mm-hmm. where it made its secret sly world premiere, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, and I was very excited to see it. It's goofy, but... well, go ahead. You talk first.
I thought it was... I mean, it's very slow, and it's only playing in, like, two screens in the entire country. So unless you live in New York or Los Angeles, you're not going to be able to see it just yet. But you should check it out on DVD if you kind of like those novelty films, because it's very much a novelty film. It's about this guy who is the last of a dying breed of big hero guys, and he gets shocked with electricity, and it turns into this, like, ginormous him fighting off these huge, I don't know, aliens, monsters. So he's kind of like a monster fighter, and he protects the city, but he's also like this goon.
Well,
and he's this like lazy bum.
Yeah, because the thing is, Japan cinema has a is it fair to say a fascination with giant things crushing cities?
Yeah.
The Japanese do have a real affinity for that, you know, with the Godzilla movies and Mothra and that sort of thing. And this is sort of like, it's sort of the presupposition as if there were really, it's sort of like a documentary style, if there were giant protectors of these cities that then fight these giant creatures, and that's what this guy is. And it yeah. goes from that documentary style where they're interviewing the guy before he transforms, you know, when he's not Big Man Japan. But then it turns into this wacky sort of Power Rangers kind of fighting around the building sort of movie.
Right.
The trailer's cooler than the movie. The movie was quite boring, actually.
The movie's really slow, and it's shot documentary style, and they try and bring in, like, all of these citizens of this town who are talking about how worthless this big man is.
Yeah.
And the only thing that's really cool about it is kind of the fight scenes. Yeah. And some of them are really cool. Some of them are really goofy, though. Like, just off the wall.
Yeah.
So, but you know what? It's kind of fun. Like I said, if you like those novelty movies that are just kind of so weird... that you almost have to see them, you're drawn to them, then this could be pretty good for you.
I'll say this about Big Man Japan. It's like nothing else you've ever seen.
Oh, well, indeed.
Even if you're a fan of the Japanese monster movies, it's different from all those two.
It's quite weird. I also wanted to mention, I know we're probably not going to review this until next week, but The Brothers Bloom comes out in limited release this week.
Yep. But they haven't shown it to us.
They haven't shown it to any of us, but I have a feeling as it rolls out to the nation, we're both going to see it, so we'll probably do full reviews later. But I'm hearing good things. Rian Johnson. I like Rian Johnson. He did Brick, which is one of my favorite movies the last, like, five years.
Really?
So, oh yeah, I love Brick.
Yeah. Brick was okay. And, Brick was okay. I wasn't on the Brick bandwagon. There were people
that's
that
just... That's because you don't like bandwagons.
That's right. I prefer orchestra wagons. Now... I thought it was a little introspective. It was a little overly cognizant of itself, kind of doing the whole film noir thing. But it was kind of cool. Again, it's a movie that you don't see that often. It's not right. like much that's out there.
I agree. So. Good call, Kevin Carr.
Although Brothers Bloom looks very different, so I'm very interested in seeing that.
Yeah, I know. I'm with you. So that's why I brought it up.
Okay.
So, moving on, we've got. We wanted to take this time because normally here we review like the other big film that's coming out, which there aren't any. I mean, we just spent, 5 minutes talking about a movie that's only playing in like two screens in the entire country.
But it would count as a big movie because it has big in the title.
It has a big man in Japan.
Yes.
So, but we're going to, there was a coup de DVD this week.
This week was insane for DVDs. Usually I'm struggling because I do a top five pick every week. And sometimes I'm struggling where I'm kind of like, Mr. Belvedere Season 8 is my fifth pick. You know, I mean, it's that sort of
right.
just stretch.
Well, I mean, obviously because it's Mr. Belvedere Season 8.
Of course. Brock Toon.
I mean, I don't see any reason why you wouldn't pick that. But
Brock Toon.
It's just me. But not only was there just a ton of DVDs out, there is a large amount of Star Trek theme DVDs and Blu-rays and stuff to talk about. And I'm not really sure why. I don't know why Star Trek all of a sudden is relevant again.
I heard they're making a remake of it.
Right. Yeah, I heard there was some kind of reboot. Who knows? But I feel like we should talk about those.
Absolutely. I know you're excited about certain titles in the Star Trek line, so let's hear your...
Yeah.
Here I am again being so magnanimous and nice to you.
You are. You're being such a nice guy. I don't like it.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm going to get like...
The claws are going to come out in segment three.
Yeah. Or like you've sent a hit on me or something. But no, I received recently the Star Trek Original Motion Picture Collection in Blu-ray, which is the first six movies, mm-hmm. including, but not limited to, Wrath of Khan. So, and I thought, I mean...
So you got what? Three movies and three cup holders, coasters, right?
Oh, you. Anyways, but I no, there's a seventh disc to this, which I think is the most... I haven't had a chance to dig through all of these yet, because they just got here.
There's a lot of stuff on Blu-ray. You can fit a lot of things on Blu-ray.
Oh, yeah. It's just ridiculous. There's tons of never-before-seen features. Mm-hmm. And there's also this, they call it the Captain's Summit, which mm-hmm. is a whole disc of... They bring together all the captains. They have Picard and Shatner and that other guy.
And then the other two Spock, that nobody cares about.
And the other ones that nobody knows who they are.
Well, the other three, I guess.
And they you know, trade Star Trek stories. So that's kind of the most interesting thing, the one I'm looking forward to watching. And, of course, I cannot wait to watch Wrath of Khan on Blu-ray.
Khan! Because
earlier in the year, I went to a Wrath of Khan screening on the big screen.
And didn't
and
get
was
to see
robbed,
it.
Yeah. Handily robbed of my opportunity to see Wrath of Khan. And since then, I've been thinking about watching it on regular DVD, and I knew the Blu-ray was coming out, so I just kind of held back.
Yeah, and now you can. Well, there's also, in addition to the movie collection, they've also released, and it's weird, they call it the Star Trek Trilogy, which I guess it's a trilogy in the sense that it has three movies. it's Star Trek 2, Star Trek 3, Star Trek 4, which is The Wrath of Khan, which dovetails, and I guess it does because there is a continuing storyline that goes through these three movies.
Right.
From Khan to The Search for Spock to The Voyage Home, and... Mm-hmm. It does have an overall arc. So I guess I don't disagree with packaging them together because Star Trek 1, 5, and 6 are kind of standalone movies. Especially Star Trek 5 should be standing alone far, far,
in a field somewhere
away.
In Iowa.
Yeah, somewhere else.
Where they're building starships.
Where people are really, really drunk when they're going to go see that. But right. It's and what's funny about it is if you look on the Blu-ray, on the front it's like starring Kirk and Spock. Which,
just in general, just Kirk and Spock?
Just Kirk and Spock, not starring William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy, but as if they weren't in the other three movies in the original series. But this is a nice little... These are three of sort of like the heyday of the Star Trek movies. A lot of people badmouth Search for Spock, which is number three. I love that movie. I thought that was a fun movie, and
I think I might watch that tonight.
It bridges the other two really well. Yes, it's true. Star Trek II is superior, but...
Obviously.
It does bridge the gap, and it has the two that were directed by Leonard Nimoy in it. And it has tons of special features. I mean, again, Blu-ray discs, just they cram that stuff in there, and they have all these sort of like, you know, features that you can do while
the movie's
going. Oh, yes,
when done well. And I think and I've gotten this maybe it's part of like writing a Blu-ray column for the last year or so. I've gotten pretty good at just looking at the box and going, oh, yeah, this is going to be a good one.
Oh, yeah.
Because you could just tell... Based on the special features and previous DVD releases.
Yeah, when the print's so small on the cover that they got to just squeeze in all the special features
news. And all these Star Trek ones, they just look phenomenal. Yeah.
The ones that are bad is when they say original trailer HD next to it. And they're like,
we made the trailer high definition for you.
Yeah, when they say special features, English subtitles. And you're like, oh, that's not really a special feature. You're just trying to make it look like you have special features.
Exactly.
There's also the original series and the Next Generation are getting a best of release. It's a single disc that has four episodes from, I don't know if you say the best of, they're calling them the best of from the two series. And those are available.
The Trouble with Tribbles is on the original series one. So yeah. That's all that matters.
Yes. That's one of my favorite episodes. And then also, while we only have about 30 seconds, Galaxy Quest Deluxe Edition, sort of the 10-year anniversary, one of the best sort of spoofs of Star Trek and the fans that has ever been done. Tim Allen, Sigourney Weaver, Alan Rickman. Hilarious, hilarious
really?
Movie.
Really? That's a Star Trek thing?
Well, it's based on Star Trek. You know that.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I've never seen Galaxy Quest.
Oh, dude, you have to see Galaxy Quest. It's brilliant. It is so hilarious. And it has like Tony Shalhoub from Monk is one of the...
Oh, Shalhoub.
Yeah, he plays the Chinese guy. The Chinese mechanic.
He plays the Sulu character?
Yeah, but he's not Chinese. He's like Israeli or something like that. Anyways.
Well, no. I mean, he's Shalhoub.
He's
so
Shalhoub,
there you
go. All right. Well, we got to go to a break.
Shalhoub.
hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We are in the middle segment in which we usually talk about box office, and well, we're still going to talk about box office.
you scared me there for a second. Like, what are we going to talk about?
We have some surprises later in the segment. We're going to talk about, we're going to do a Fat Guy 5.
Which everyone loves. Everyone loves the Fat Guy 5.
Yeah, I love the Fat Guy 5. You love the Fat Guy 5. Assuming the other listeners do.
Yeah. There you go.
My wife listens. She likes it. She's caught up finally.
Hey.
So, good for her. There you go. So let's talk the box office. Star Trek did not perform as well as I had hoped, but it definitely did perform well.
It did. I mean, it did well. I know I was predicting $180 million, and I was way off.
Yeah, by a lot. Like $4.
So,
It did not beat Wolverine, but I think there's a lot to be said over the last 3 years as the first movie of the summer just has that monster weekend. It happened with Spider-Man 3. It happened with Iron Man being that sort of that out of the gate green flag in front of the track kind of thing.
Well, and I think
you're going to get a bump.
You know what it is? It's because May has become such a packed month.
Yeah.
You know, so the first one that comes out is usually kind of it gets the big jump on everybody else, and then it just kind of just jams together the rest of the releases.
And it wasn't, how long has it been since they've really been using the first weekend? It's only been about the last 5-6 years that the first weekend in May.
Spider-Man like the first like huge opening May weekend?
Was it the original? That's possible because
maybe Spider-Man
the X-Men movies, same thing. But before that, like you had Mission Impossible 3 had launched like a couple years ago, and it kind of fizzled out of the gate.
Right.
But ever since then, it's been Spider-Man 3, which wouldn't have done as well if it had come out. Iron Man, I think, would have done well, but it may not have had that massive opening audience.
Right.
It used to be that Memorial Day was the big opening weekend day. So that's why Wolverine still beat it box office for opening weekend, but Wolverine sank like a stone, and I think Star Trek's going to have legs because I don't think it's going to... Angels and Demons is going to get the blockbuster audience from it,
right.
But there's still going to be a lot of people who are going to want to see Star Trek. Plus, you had Mother's Day, which people are spending time going out to dinner with their moms and going to
brunch.
Church. And
everybody goes to brunch with their mom.
Yeah, and even then, and if you notice, they misrepresented or they underestimated Sunday's box office by several million.
Right.
Even on Mother's Day, it did very well. So, and it's been making, it's like $7 million a day.
Yeah, I mean, it went from coming out of the weekend at like $79 million. It's already through like Wednesday, I think it's like 93 already. So it's made another, $10 million. So,
yeah.
But here's a thought.
Okay.
And this is one of the things, this kind of goes back to my theory about May being so packed. It's hard to get momentum in May. If you look at, say, The Dark Knight, and I know this is kind of a amplified situation because The Dark Knight was, A, the best film of last year, and B, they had a lot of things going on around it that made it just a huge release. But there really wasn't a whole lot that came after The Dark Knight that allowed The Dark Knight to just continue to just rock the box office.
Well, Dark Knight was positioned for the end of July, and then it just, even though there were some good...
And then it just rolled throughout the...
There were some good August movies, but it just didn't...
Right, and I think what happens is every movie that comes out in May essentially runs into a wall.
Yeah.
So the wall that Wolverine ran into was Star Trek, so it dropped 70%. The wall that Star Trek's going to run into is Angels and Demons, which, sure, they're not in the same ballpark. They're not playing the same game, but there is a segment of the audience, the segment of that adult Star Trek audience that might just go see Angels and Demons this weekend and not see Star Trek, even though they heard good things.
I think that they're more similar than people would initially think, but I don't think they're going to steal too much from each other's audience.
Right, but I mean, it really is. You just run into a wall, and in 2 weeks, Star Trek and Angels and Demons are going to run into Terminator, and that's another big franchise. So,
and Night at the Museum. They've got two
Night at the
big
Museum,
ones coming
which is
out
a big family
week.
Movie, and then you get Pixar's Up at the end of the month. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if Up is the highest grossing May release because it doesn't have, I mean, it's got like The Hangover in the first week of June, but I wouldn't be surprised if Up just kind of carries through the first couple of weeks of June until
some of
the other big stuff comes out.
This is the other thing. Schools are getting out earlier and earlier, and this is why. This is the politics behind this. Proficiency tests are done in May.
Right.
And it's such a big deal for schools to get proficiency tests out of the way, and they want to get the kids to pass the tests, that after the test, they really don't – they're like, well, we've already done the test, so it's sort of like, no pun intended, an academic exercise asked for that. So they're ending school earlier. They're starting school earlier in August. So now May is opening up as the new June for movies, and it's not just – and now after Memorial Day – you know, and then you're going to have the Memorial Day weekend, then you're going to have Pixar's Up coming out, and then no one's in school. And so Pixar is just going to enjoy this weeks of all-day viewing where Star Trek is still dealing with kids in school and that sort
right.
of thing.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah. So I do think – and the only – and like look at like last year with Iron Man. Part of the reason I mean, Iron Man was a great movie, but part of the reason it did so well is because the next weekend was Speed Racer –
and
which
it just
tanked.
Yeah.
And so it had the wall, it was more or less a shelf that it just leaped over and continued going.
Yeah, and I don't feel like Angels and Demons is going to be a tank movie. It's not going to tank. It's going to do well.
Now, if they had released Star Trek last week or the week before and then Wolverine afterwards, I think it would have made more money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Although I will say, in another thing on box office, Next Day Air, which got completely lost in the shuffle, I was right. It made less money through the entire weekend than Star Trek made on Thursday night.
Nice.
And so, even to add insult to injury, it also made less than Star Trek made on Monday.
Oh, poor Next Day Air.
Anyways,
big question, I guess, this week is how much is Angels and Demons going to make?
I have no idea.
I mean, I'm thinking right around $50 million. I feel like that's a $50 million opening property.
I think 50 to 60 is a safe bet.
Yeah. I mean, it's not going to get over 60. It's not going to get anywhere near. Because I think Star Trek's still going to make $30 million. Like, I think it'll be 50, 30, I don't know, 12 for Wolverine.
I think Star Trek has a good shot at making $40
million. Really?
Well, you look at drops. A 50% drop is considered normal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think and that would be $40 million. So I think Star Trek has a really good shot at making $30 to $40 million. I don't know if it'd make more than that, but Angels and Demons will probably win with 50, you know, 50 plus.
Right.
But I really think Star Trek is going to have legs like people were, even people who are predicting it's going to have legs. It's going to have longer legs than that.
Okay. I'm with you. Whatever.
So there. You're like, okay.
Moving on. And now for something completely different.
Yes.
Whoa, kicked my microphone there. Sorry. Let's do a Fat Guy 5.
All right. Hey.
I think now would be a good time to do that.
Yes.
And this week's Fat Guy 5 is not the 5, because there's more than 5, and not the top 5, because, well, we didn't feel like spending enough time.
We were lazy, and we just came up with the first 5.
Yeah, so we decided that together that Angels and Demons is a better movie than The Da Vinci Code, I think. Was that the whole point, right?
Yes, that's what leads us into.
So then we found 5 other sequels that were better than the original.
Yes.
And obviously, I mean, we could put obvious stuff like The Godfather 2 on there, but no way, man. We're going with some fat guy favorites.
Yes.
And
you start.
I'll start?
Yeah. I'm being magnanimous this week. That's the way it is. Well, hey. That's how I roll.
Oh, you're sweet. Anyways, we'll start with The Dark Knight, which came out last year and was
better. I thought
we were
starting with Gremlins 2.
No.
Oh, okay. The new batch?
The new batch. Well, Gremlins 2 was pretty good, but I don't know. I don't think you can beat that first one. But The Dark Knight came out last year, was significantly better than Batman Begins because it had action in it, and Batman Begins really didn't. So
who was in that one again?
I don't know. That Christian Bale.
Yes.
So, moving on.
Moving on, I'm going to say Aliens. And as much as I loved Alien, the movie, Aliens, I think...
Had multiple aliens.
Yeah, it had more aliens and more people getting killed. And there were actually two different movies. Aliens is an action sci-fi movie, whereas Alien is more of a haunted house, a horror movie in space.
Right. Nice. Well done. Mm-hmm. You get the next one, too. That one's yours.
I do?
Well, of course.
All right, well, and this is the one I think, even if you disagree with the other ones, everyone can agree with this.
Well, obviously.
Troll, Troll 2. Troll 2 beat the pants off the original Troll, which, incidentally, do you know who the main character of Troll was?
No.
Harry Potter. The kid's name was Harry Potter in it.
The kid's name was Harry, like, in the movie, his name was Harry Potter? Or, like, yeah. The kid's real name was Harry Potter?
No, the character was named Harry Potter, and he was dealing with, you know, sort of
that J.K. Rowling, I knew she stole it from somewhere.
That crappy little welfare mother. No, wow. But Troll 2 is a fantastic movie, one of the best bad movies ever made, and what's awesome about it is they don't even have trolls in it.
Yeah, exactly.
They're goblins. They call them goblins, and so it makes no sense to call it Troll 2, but it's a hilarious movie because the kid stands up in the middle of the movie and pees on everybody's dinner.
I see. Well, the next one that we have on our list is here for two reasons, three reasons perhaps. One, we already mentioned in the show. Two, Kevin likes to reenact the film's iconic scene. And three, because it really is way better than the first movie. We're talking about Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan. You really
you
like
notice
to
I,
do that.
I move the microphone away from me, so mm-hmm. It actually reenacts a scene where they're pulling away from the planet.
Right. And Shatner. I mean,
Shatner and his wig.
Let's just say this: it is the one Star Trek movie that had probably the most villainous villain of all time in Khan, played by Ricardo Montalban.
Who had better hair, Shatner or Ricardo Montalban in that movie?
Ricardo Montalban, obviously. Shatner.
Awesome.
Shatner had, I don't know, better surfer
and
guy
when I
hair.
Say,
but Montalban
when I say
was
hair,
like he was evil, man, all the way down to the haircut.
Khan had the Bodhi hair from Patrick Swayze and
very much
in Point Blank. Point Blank.
Yeah. So and then I really feel like this is one of those movies that just ends in such a way that you just don't see it coming, and it's very sad, yeah. But it's also triumphant. So
it was more human.
Yeah, exactly.
Another reenacting of the movie. If you haven't seen it yet, it's like 30 years old. Go out and see it.
Right. And moving.
I have no shame if I ruined it for anybody.
Yep. And moving on to our last one, I'm gonna let you take this one because you're probably
scared.
Explain it better, and I'm scared to take a stand on this one.
I'm going to say Empire Strikes Back. And with all the love for Star Wars, the original A New Hope, I love Star Wars. I'm a big Star Wars fan. The sequel, Empire Strikes Back, took it up a notch. And at the time, in the late 70s, when they made a sequel, usually it just sucked balls. And this one was fantastic. And basically, people say Star Wars is a reason we have all these sequels. No, Empire Strikes Back is the thing that set the stage for all the sequels in the world, and it is the gold standard for sequels.
And speaking of gold standards, when we come back, our gold standard ending. And we're wrapping you up here on Fat Guys of the Movies. We've reached our gold standard segment, I guess. Whatever I was trying to say at the end of the last segment.
Just let it go. You had a terrible transition.
But as we do in every closing segment, it is time to do the DVD roundup. Special effects by Lucasfilm.
By Skywalker Sound.
Skywalker Sound. Put that together for us. So we'll start with me, since yes. I know you're going to be magnanimous anyways about it, and you're going to be like, oh, you go first. I'm just going to go first.
Okay, you do that, jerk.
But I'm taking Taken, ooh, the Liam Neeson revenge movie, yes, which is still one of my favorite movies of the year so far.
Really?
Because, well, I mean, it starts with Maggie Grace trying to act like a 16-year-old, and that's fun, I guess. And then it ends with, of course, Liam Neeson just killing a lot of people. And that, to me, is
Maggie
awesome.
Grace lived like 5 minutes from my house when she was actually really 16. So there.
She did?
Yeah, she's from Worthington, Ohio, man.
Oh.
She went to high school at my rivals.
I went to
Upper Arlington. She went to Worthington.
Don't say that out loud, man. You don't want Liam Neeson to come attack you because you were at a rival school. Of his daughter.
I'm not trying to sell her into like sexual slavery,
yeah,
overseas.
You see how that worked for the sheik that was trying to make her a sex slave.
There you go.
So, and then the other one was Underworld: Rise of the Lycans, which I just now saw this week.
Mm-hmm.
after wanting to see it since it came out in January. And, you know, I was impressed. Mm-hmm. It is not easy to make an Underworld movie because you're talking about just a large landscape of werewolves, mm-hmm. or lycans, as they like to be called. Lycans. And I felt like Patrick Tatopoulos, as a director, he was the production designer on the first two movies. Mm-hmm. I felt like he did a great job, and it looks a little cheesy, sure. Oh, yeah. But you also have to keep it in perspective and think, man, this is there's a scene in this movie where there's like 100 werewolves in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And it just looks really cool. And there's some really cool action in it. And, you know, I didn't like Rona Mitra in it. She's just kind of an awful actress, but
she's hot, though.
She's hot, so there you go. And she's in leather, really so... But she's no Kate Beckinsale.
Has fantastic legs. I saw her at Comic-Con. She has fantastic legs.
Well, yeah. But yeah, no, I didn't like her. She was the only thing I didn't like about the movie. Even Michael Sheen. Like, I was like, how did they get Tony Blair in this movie?
Oh, he's awesome. He was great in
and
the other
And it
was movies.
Great, so... Yeah.
Well, you know what? This is what I said about Underworld when it came out. I said, take your wife or girlfriend to go see this and show her what a real vampire werewolf movie is. None of this Twilight garbage.
None of this Twilight crap. So yeah. All right, your turn.
All right. I'm going to move on with some smaller ones that are TV related or sort of TV related. First of all, we got Seth MacFarlane's Cavalcade of Cartoon Comedy. He did a whole bunch of little short snippets on his YouTube channel. And they were not Family Guy characters or not American Dad characters. They're just little goofy bits and sketches. Mm. And the best part about them, they're uncensored because they were on the internet. And now they're all put together in about an hour-long DVD. And some of them are stupid old jokes that you've seen before, but some are absolutely hilarious. They have a whole segment of different things. They have like Optimus Prime having sex, Mr. Sulu awesome. Having sex. It's really, really funny.
With Optimus Prime?
No, separately. All right. Trust me. It's still funny. Let's also talk 2.5 Men Season 5. Now, there's actually a debate raging on Film School Rejects because Rob Hunter put this in the DVDs to avoid. No, this is a funny, funny show. And Season 5, what's so funny about it, they have an episode where they've switched writing staffs with the people who do CSI. So you have this 2.5 Men episode written by the guys who did CSI, and then they put on as a bonus feature, they do this, they give you the CSI episode that's written by the 2.5 Men people. Absolutely hilarious. And both of them are hilarious because it's basically the creator venting his spleen about working with Roseanne when he did her TV show. Because the Roseanne character gets murdered.
Nice.
So it's a funny show, and it's the most
I've actually watched
this.
That show. I mean, here and there, because it's like it's on
all
the time.
Because it hit its 100th episode. Now it's in syndication, and it's funny. I'll tell you, it's some of the raunchiest stuff. You got Charlie Sheen and Charlie Brown, you know, because that's John Cryer's character. He's like Charlie Brown, just can't get a break. There's also Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the original series, season 7. And what's cool about this is instead of just giving you a box set or just individual DVDs. Each of the four DVDs, they're packed separately, so you kind of have to buy them each. But you can probably get them, you know, a discount online or something like that. And it's a collectible box, but it also has a toy in it. It has an action figure, an articulated action figure. So for the bummer is that you actually have to open the box to watch the DVD. So the action figure loses its value the second you crack the seal. But I thought that was kind of a cool. I thought that's kind of cool. A nod to the fact that that this show was such a big deal for collectibles anyways. Then finally, Penn and Teller, I'm going to say BS season 6. It's their Showtime TV show where they basically debunk a whole bunch of myths and goofiness. They go after things like, are the dolphins really smarter than humans? And they go after going green, and they go after the war on porn. And it's funny, raunchy, and very well constructed.
Excellent.
And there's no stinkers, really.
There really aren't any stinkers. I mean, there are a few that we've heard of. I mean, like Passengers, The Grudge 3, S. Darko. We've heard that these are all awful, but we have no idea. So
yeah, we haven't seen them.
Anyways, review wrap-up time. Angels and Demons, we both saw. I said it kind of rocks.
I said it rocks. Full on rocks.
And next week, we've got a big week for you. We got Terminator Salvation. We got Night at the Museum 2. And, of course, the movie everybody's wanting to hear our opinion on, Dance Flick.
Which you're actually going to show to us.
Apparently. Well, to you, at least. So... we'll see.
You're not getting a screening of that?
I don't know, man. We'll find out. But in the meantime, while we go and check that out, here's how you can get a hold of us. You can get us over at fatguysthemovies.com. You can get us on iTunes. Just search in the iTunes store, Fat Guys the Movies. Email us, fatguysfilmschoolrejects.com, and voicemail, 614-388-8735.
Trek. Until then,
Live long and prosper.
Did you just say shalom like shalom? Woohoo!